Here's Mark.
Well, good morning to you. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and hopefully it'll be worth your time to sit here and talk to us today or listen to us today. But if you want to talk to us, it's easy. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. I have some statistical data I thought I'd share with you. And for 1 year, last year, 2019, we had a total of 545 callers in all the shows. That's over 43 weeks and 86 hours. So 545 callers, if you want, divided by 86 hours. Now, we've had one show with 21 callers. That's kind of like my record. But we've also had one show with 6, one with 8, and a couple with 9. But every other show has more than 10 callers. So with few exceptions, I can do 5 an hour. That's why you can probably get in, 602-508-0960. And this is how it works. We're really talking about front counter stuff here. I walk in and I go, hi, I have a, da, 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 da. I have a 2014 Ford Edge. And, it doesn't start first thing in the morning, but, you know, after I try 2 or 3 or 4 times, it does. And then I say, well, tomorrow morning, I want you to turn the key on, but not crank it over. And I want you to count to 3. Off, on, 1, 2, 3. Off, on, 1, 2, 3. Then tell me if it starts. Yes, it starts. Okay, we've got something wrong in the fuel system, and what you did is primed it 3 times. So you primed the fuel system, that's why it, boom, started right up. So we need to find out if the fuel pressure regulator's bad, or if the fuel pump's bad, or if the filter's plugged. So we're going to be dealing with the fuel system. That's kind of how it works. It's kind of give and take. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm going to tell you about a young lady that I've known for a long time, and I've actually used her. She's a physical therapist. Her name is Ashley Payne, and it's not P-A-I-N. It's obviously P-A-Y-N-E. So I've known a few cowboys who have ended up on their heads, and they end up going to physical therapy, and they won't admit it, but one guy got tossed on his head by his horse. His hard drive was scrambled. He suffered a neck injury. So he went to Dr. Payne. Yeah, Dr. Payne. She's a professional physical therapy, and she runs the Therizona Clinic. She may weigh 100 pounds, but she worked him over like she was mad at him, and he said he almost cried. But he says he's 98%. So my cowboy buddy, he has them do something called dry needling, which is like acupuncture. He says he can fall asleep while they stick needles in him. So I called Dr. Payne and I said, I would pay for a picture of him looking like a porcupine. She said no rather tersely and said no twice, and that was it. She has 10 years of experience. She really does a good job. So if you have muscle pain or a joint injury or something like that, I've used her myself. I'm not sending it to somebody that's paying me to tell you. As a matter of fact, she's not even paying for this. I'm doing it because she's good. Ashley Payne at Therizona. It's on Higley and Guadalupe, just south of the 60. And let me just date this thing so everybody knows I did it. This is what goes on behind the scenes, this paperwork. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Car repair's kind of tough, but it'll be cheaper for you. And if you just have the interchange, just talk about it. Let's give and take. Vibrations, no starts. It runs poorly. The air conditioning works great on the highway, but it doesn't work worth a darn in the city. When I get into my car, I hit the key and it just clicks sometimes. But if I keep hitting the key to the start position, it'll finally start up. I'm just kind of going over some cars this week that I read the documents on. It's sometimes my windows will roll up and down. Okay. Is it the master window that we're talking about, or is it other windows? It's other windows. Is it the same window each time? Yes. Okay, good. We're going to work on that window. On the other side of the coin, the master switch, which is to the left of the driver's, is the one that gets the most use. It's also the one that's most expensive. It's not hard to change it, but the issue is how you can save yourself an immense amount of money, diagnostic money. is if you got a time where you use the master switch and you command one of the windows to drop and it doesn't, I want you to push hard on that pin. Push hard on that button. Roughhouse it. Maybe even take a pencil with an eraser and bang on it. If you can get it to work after you do that, you've pretty much diagnosed the problem yourself. And so you come in and say, you know, 99 times out of 100, when I push the right rear window down, or I push the passenger window, I command it to go down, it goes. But when it doesn't go, if I just roughhouse that button, it goes. And lately it's been, instead of 99 times out of 100, it's like 70 times out of 100 it works, and then 30 times out of 100 doesn't work. So that's the give and take. That's what's important. What we get a lot of is my car's overheating. In the 60s and the 70s, the gauges on cars would keep the needle like at a quarter, give or take a needle's width on either side of the quarter mark. Today, and so people have that mentality that the needle should always be below half. It's not that way and hasn't been since 1980. In 1980, we put a 195 thermostat in it, and here's why. We now know that if we don't run the engine over 220, it's going to be bad for you, and here's why. So as you sit there right now, tell me, please, when water boils. It's 100 Celsius or 220 Fahrenheit. So in the old days, we never got the engine oil up above 180, 190. So the oil mixed with the water, that every time you shut the car off, we're going to generate a half a teaspoon of water as the air condenses. So what happens is that we don't ever boil the water out of the oil, so you end up with sludge. And those of you that had cars in the 50s, 60s, and 70s know doggone well what sludge looks like. It's a chocolate syrup. It's a chocolate pudding. That's better. Chocolate pudding. So when you open up the car, it's unbelievable. Now, everybody used to think it was Pennzoil, and that's not true at all. So in 1980-81, we went to a 195 thermostat, which brings the water temperature, the cooling system, to 220. We don't have water anymore, and we don't have sludge anymore. But your car has to run between half and three quarters. And so we get a lot of people that come in. My car's overheating. Where's the needle? Well, it's flirting with three quarters. Okay, let me go drive it and see what happens. But I'm probably going to tell you that's normal. I'm concerned a little bit when it goes over three quarters. On the other hand, if you're in stop and go traffic and the weather in Phoenix is 110 degrees, you're running your air full blast, and it gets one or two needle widths past the three quarter, you look in your environment and you go, okay, I know why. Then you break onto the freeway and all of a sudden the needle comes down. Bingo. The system's working like it should. So as you look at that, we want you to run between half and three quarter. Now, I tell my wife, and I tell you, I don't want the needle in the red, ever. You really can't believe how many times a car's towed in and the motor's cooked, the radiator's melted, the head gaskets are blown. Those are thousands and thousands of dollars worth of repair. And here's what we hear. Well, it did overheat, and I was at rural in the 60 heading east, so I thought I could make it to my house at Mesa Drive. So what you did is you cooked your motor because you didn't want to pull off the side of the road and call a tow truck. The tow truck, even if they charged you $200 or $300, that's 1/5, 1/6, 1/7 of what we're going to pay now. So it's a good, and many of you have towing insurance, and if you don't, call your insurance company and tell them you want towing insurance. You can call anybody you want. Most insurance companies let you call anybody you want. So you should have somebody's card in there, and if not, ask your garage. Who do you use? We use Arizona Boys. We've used them for, 10 years or more. So they do a good job. They're there within reasons. You know, sometimes in the middle of the summertime, you might have to wait an hour for a tow truck, but it's all of them. And he delivers the car unbroken, and he doesn't have any caved-in suspension where he winched the, you know, like a chiropractor's bench. He pulled the back, and he pulled the front, and pulled the front suspension off of it. That's never happened. So those are the kinds of things that we're going to have this year, and it's just a good idea. Think about this. The coolant gauge, if it's flirting, and we talk about the needle width, okay, the needle width or the width of the needle, I don't want it to get within a width of the needle of the red. I think you need to call somebody and have it towed. If the needle's in the red, shut down, pull off the side of the road. You're going to love my advice. I don't have a dog in this fight. It's just really an issue of, you know, we see this every summer. Every summer. And the common verbiage is, well, I thought I could make it home. And you can't. So, and what a cooked motor. You just lift the hood and you can smell it. You can just, oh boy, this ain't going to be pretty. So you put water in it, you start it up. Sometimes it'll run, but you put pressure on the water, the head gaskets are blown, and when we pressurize the water, you see your radiator cap holds 16 pounds of pressure, so I'm going to take it to 17, and I'm going to force water into the cylinder, and the motor's just humming along, put water in it, and then I start putting pressure to it, and all of a sudden, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay. All we got to do is figure out which cylinder it is, and take spark plugs out, crank it over, and number six is puking water coolant out of it. That's it. Now, I make it sound easy, but this isn't easy to do. And don't misunderstand. I can say it in 30 seconds, but it might take 15 or 20 minutes to accomplish it, or even longer, depending on the car. So that's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, so if you have a car question, if you want to argue with me, I'm okay with that. Or if you have a story you want to tell, but let's talk about symptoms and let's talk about the problem and let me ask some questions so we can kind of get close. So 602-508-0960. Everybody, 602-508-0960. But Tom's here. Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. This is Tom from Mesa. We spoke earlier in the week about my 03 PT Cruiser with, we think, a misdiagnosed blown head gasket.
Yes, yes, and yes, we did.
I did that poor man's pressure test. I pulled the radiator cap off and fired it up and rev the engine, and that water in the filler neck was as still as Walden Pond. So my question for you is, if the thermostat is stuck closed, would a compromised gasket still let pressure be visible at the filler neck?
Okay, let's back up so we can get everybody else in the conversation. How much was it that you were quoted, but don't say the shop?
$2,500.
Okay. So, folks, he's got an overheat condition, and they've diagnosed it as a cracked head, which is nothing you can really diagnose till you take it apart. You know there's a combustion leak from the shop's point of view, but we just really don't know if it's a head gasket or a broken head. And actually, it's a head gasket 9 out of 10 times. Okay, to answer your question, I also told you I wanted you to drive it, and I wanted you to drive it till the upper hose got warm. That'll tell us the thermostat's opening up. So once we start dumping water up front, and then remember I said, I want you to drive it till that upper hose gets good and firm and good and hot, and then I want you to get home, and I want you to wait for 20 or 30 minutes, and then go out there and see if the upper hose is still filled with coolant, and it's pressurized. And then at that point, you start it up, because if you have a blown head gasket or if you have a broken head, remember I said, you start it up, and it'll run poorly. And then all of a sudden it will mysteriously start humming like a watch. So you're kind of self-diagnosing it. Folks, I'm trying to give him some advice so that he can determine whether he's got a blown head gasket or not, or whether he's forcing water into the cylinder, that kind of stuff. For a shop, this is what we do. We just pull the radiator cap. We pressurize the cooling system with a pump that we have. We look at the cap. It says 16 pounds. We pump it up to 17 pounds, and we walk away. We go do an oil change or we do whatever. So we come back 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever, and it's still holding 30 or it's not. And if it's not, then we find out where the water's at. So we might start it up and it misses and then all of a sudden it clears up. Well, one of the cylinders has got water in it and that's the reason why it's not participating. So then the matter is let's take the spark plugs out of it, let it sit for a while on pressure, and then we call the junior technician over. And the junior tech, we had him standing, facing the four spark plug holes, and then we tap the starter and ask him if he sees any water coming out.
And he'll only do that once because as soon as we tap the motor, the water will spray on him. And you don't do it when the motor's real hot and stuff like that, but that's just kind of an initiation into the car repair. So, and most of the time, that is going to take maybe, I don't know, $50, $75. They're going to charge you a half an hour. I'm thinking all that can be done in a half an hour. So,
yeah.
You know, the real issue is if you get hot fast and it gets up there and flirts with the red and the upper hose doesn't have a lot of heat to it, then yes, the thermostat is the likely culprit. And at that point, you can let it cool off, take the radiator cap off, and if you want to replace the thermostat, that's fine. Just get a 195, get the one that's applied for your car. You make sure you have a little silicone and a gasket, and you're all set.
Okay?
Okay.
Hey, I appreciate it, Mark.
That's okay. Thank you very much. We actually spoke this week about this, and folks, I've been wrong before, but maybe in 1963. I am not capable, and neither is anybody else, in my opinion, of telling you where the combustion leak is at. So for somebody to just arbitrarily throw a number out and say this is what you need without you paying them somewhere between an hour at 125 or a half an hour, you got to pay for a diagnosis. So if this is one of those, the car goes in the shop and 15 minutes later the guy comes out and says you got a blown head gasket, this is how you drive away. You haven't filled it up with water, and then you haven't put the cap onto the first click, not the second click. Otherwise, we're not building pressure. And drive home or drive to another shop, whatever you want to do. But it's just it's a bad deal for somebody to diagnose it real fast and while you haven't even finished your soda pop in the lobby. I'll tell you another shop that could do that and do it well, Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. Master technician's been around a very long time, since 1987. And he knows what he's doing, and I can't tell you how many times, many of the good repair shops, the best repair shops on my list at marksalem.com, they've bailed me out. I make promises on their behalf, and then they perform. So, Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell. If you live in that area and don't have a garage, then I'd like to suggest that you do that. Another shop on the other side of town is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. I've known Brian and Thelma, and I've known their parents since the 60s. Now, Brian and Thelma haven't known them since the 60s, but I've known their parents, the Thompson and the Vivian family. My gas station, when I was a kid, used to play touch football with their gas station crew, and we had a lot of fun. But Brian and Thelma are really good people, and you just have to meet them to understand that your interests are in front of their own. They're on Main Street east of Stapley, and they're a really good shop. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, you're more than welcome to call us in and call us up, and we'll do our best we can to discuss your problem with you and talk about what needs to be done. The other day, I was someplace, and I saw someone I knew, and he was asking me about tires and stuff, and he had worn the center out of all the tires, which means he had too much air in them. And then he had rotated the tires, and somebody told him he needed alignment. So I knew that the front tires are now on the back, and the back tires showed absolutely no indication that there was an alignment problem. You look at the tire, and if there's real aggressive wear on the outside edges of your front tires, you got a problem. Aggressive. Not just simply a little bit, but aggressive. If you're wearing the inside of the fronts of the front of the tires, then you've got other suspension issues. You've got a ball joint. You've got control arms moving around. But the tires, think about this. When the tires are completely vertical, and we were to turn left and right, and the tires are completely vertical, we're going to pivot on the flat part of the tire. But in fact, the tires aren't that way. So when you turn right, the tires lay over a little bit as they turn. That's why we wear the outside edge, and that's why you rotate your tires so that you can get the tires that are slightly more worn than the back ones. Get the back ones on the front and the front ones on the back. That's kind of how it works. So I was looking at his tires, and he didn't even have rounded corners on the back tires, which I expected if they came from the front. So I asked him, you know, where do you drive and stuff? He goes, I just go between Payson and Phoenix. So every day you go pay, he says, yeah, I drive down and drive back.
I said, well, that's the reason why I don't have any outside edge wear on the rear tires to indicate you're turning left and right, because you don't. you're just driving straight down and straight back. So that's kind of how the conversation works out. It's a matter of reading the tires. I think our industry's worst trait is we come up with this front-end work, and it's very lucrative, by the way, come up with this idea that you need a bunch of front-end work. Your lower control arm bushings are bad, your ball joints are bad, your upper strut mounts are bad, your tie rods are bad, your drag link is bad, your track bar is bad. And they come up with all that, and you need to say, write it down, and if they're lying, they're not going to write it down. Number two, you need to say, what symptoms do I have that you're going to fix? Now, if you have a clunk when you stop and a clunk when you take off, yes, one of those is going to fix it. Normally, the lower control arm bushings are the most predominant reason. So as you go through there, they have to have symptoms, and they have to say, you say, give me the symptoms. And if you don't have those symptoms, just smile. Just smile. And then you say, why don't you write it down and staple your business card to it? So if they're fibbing you, most of the time they won't accomplish that goal. They'll say, well, I'm just telling you. So it's really, but my industry is no different than all the rest of them. We've got good guys and bad guys, and that's the way it is. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We have five lines open, and you're just guaranteed to get a spot. And when we come back, we'll take your calls. One more time, the phone number, 602-508-0960. 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Saban. We got callers, but I got a little business to talk about. Automotive Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive repairs. I've known the family that owns that since probably the late 60s. That's a long, long time. So when it comes to working on cars and being honest, then you can trust Auto Dynamics. They're the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Let's go to the phones. Alex, you're first.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
So I have a 95 Camry, and I changed the rack and pinion a while ago. And in order to do that, I, of course, had to take out the stabilizer bar to make some room. And the bolt that bolt down the stabilizer bar, there's a piece of the frame above the engine cradle that makes it so tight, and I couldn't get all four bolts to bolt down the stabilizer bar. I was only able to get the two bolts that are closest to the front of the car, but the two back ones on each side of the brackets where the bushings are, I wasn't able to get them in. And I struggled and struggled, and I ended up damaging the threads. And I looked at the diagram of my engine cradle, and it looks like it's all one piece, and I don't think I'll be able to get it apart. Definitely something I don't have the tools for. So I was thinking about taking it to a machine shop, and I just wanted to get your advice and see what I could, you know, what the next step would possibly be to fix that.
On a 1 to 10 scale, that's a 5. Really.
Okay.
I mean, it's not, and a machine shop would not be the appropriate venue. Just take it to a reliable repair shop around you. We deal with that all the time. Right now, my guys are laughing at you just a little bit, but thank you for calling. This happens a lot.
I need to know.
No, everybody just knows all you are is Alex, and you got a Camry. But what's your last name real quick? I'm just teasing you. We all have tap and die set. We can all clean up the threads. And if we can't clean up the threads, then we'll you will screw it in its type of cab, put a nut on the back side of it or something. Or we'll take it to the next size. It's not that big of a deal. Seasoned guys are not going to have the problem you did. Now, the answer to your question is oftentimes we either dangle the suspension to reconnect stuff, or we put the weight of the car on the suspension, which puts it at its two extremes. And when you start messing with the cradle, you already know there's four points, and the cradle holds the engine and the transmission. So you're moving stuff around, and sometimes it's kind of difficult. It's not uncommon for there to be two or three guys over there, and one of them's got a big breaker bar while the other two line up two bolts. That's common. So you're really not in the big trouble you think you are. If you want, I'll suggest a shop. Just tell me where you're at.
I am actually in Los Angeles.
That's going to be a problem. But I can tell you this much. I can still help you. Call a couple auto repair shops around you. Not auto repair, auto parts. and ask for the most senior counter guy. Then you say to the senior counter guy, I live in your area, and my dad always taught me that if I broke down somewhere to call the auto parts store because they know who fixes cars, who's been around a long time, who pays their bills, whose technicians don't get the seats all greasy and stuff. So if your father was broke down in this city, who would you send your dad to? That's exactly who you go to, the experts, and that's the parts guys. So my suggestion would be that. Otherwise, you're going to drive a long way.
Okay. I will do that. I appreciate your advice. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Alex. And Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I heard you mention the lower control arm bushings. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I had my wife's Equinox in the shop we go to for a brake fluid and trans service, and they took me back, and they said the lower control arm bushings are cracked, and they're kind of captive. You know, I don't know. They're sort of pressed into, like, the lower control arm. And she wasn't having any driving or handling, and tires are almost worn out, but they look like they're wearing pretty even and everything. And I said, well, you know, it's going to be like $830 to whatever replace and then do a front end alignment. And I said, well, let's just hold off on that. And they were fine with that.
Was it my shop?
No. It's the shop we go to in our area.
All right. You have just wound my panties up really tight. I want to tell you something. I've been in this business 40 years, and if I hear one of my technicians use the word cracked, he's going home for maybe a week. I am so sick of that word. Cracked doesn't mean anything. Tires are weather cracked. Belts are weather cracked. And everybody thinks that we go from cracked to broken. That's just not true. I like how you said you don't have any clunks when you're stopping abruptly or taking off abruptly. You don't have any tire wear. I think you ought to find a new shop is what I think you ought to do. And if it was my shop, there would be somebody really big trouble. But cracked isn't. And we hear that all the time. Your lower control arm bushings are cracked, or your strut saddles are cracked. No. Are they broken or not? Are they defective or not? What symptom do I... Can you tell I'm upset? What symptom are you going to fix that I have right now? And it ain't going to happen. Because strut, you know, lower control arm, they clunk when you stop and clunk when you take off. One or the other, mostly. So it'll be like takeoff, and maybe one out of five will be stopping. But that's it. We work off symptoms. So our industry right now is in trouble. We're not fixing a whole lot of cars. The parts stores are kind of struggling. And so this brings out the very worst in our industry. So my advice is, you know what? Here's if you wanted to have fun, this is what I'm sorry. I hit my head many years ago, and I'm a sick son of a gun. I would take it back in maybe in a month from now and then just say to them, before they look at your history, you say to them, somebody told me my lower control arm bushings are bad. And maybe you can say, don't write up a worker. I'll just pay you rack time. How much you charge me and put it up on the rack? Oh, $20. Okay, let's do that. And somebody told me I needed lower control arm bushings. If you can pull that off, they'll probably say, oh, no, they're just fine. And then you're going to go crazy. I mean, I'm just a sick dog, and that's probably not what some people would want to do, but I'm just telling you, the crack doesn't do anything for me except make me mad. Gordon, if you'll stay right there, I'll take you first, I promise, and we have four lines open, 602-508-0960. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. I want to tell you about some car repair shops, but I'm just going to tell you that I'm very comfortable with gray-haired guys that have been around a long time. I'm not one to typically refer you to somebody who was born yesterday or who has 2 or 3 years in the industry. We all take 10 years to learn the industry. So Harker's has been open since 1967, Kurtz since 1987, Action since 1983, Auto Dynamics since 1982. That's my point. When you talk about Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley, been around since 1983, and I've known Tom since 1983. So if you're in that area, he has ASE Master Techs, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Good guy. Let's go to Henry, how are you?
You know, I'm gonna blame you for this, Mark. I've got a visual of a sick dog wearing twisted up panties. Thank you.
Okay. You know what? If you send me an email, I'll send you a picture.
Hey, listen. When cars are made, do they automatically have a discrepancy with the speedometer, or does that develop over time?
No. All the new cars, and this is for the last 10 years, we're almost always using an electronic sensor. I'm of the opinion that there is no wear. There is nothing that goes bad. Let me ask you, what are you measuring it against?
So let's say I'm going 60 miles an hour. It should take me 1 minute to cover 1 mile.
No, I want you to get an app on your phone, please. I'm making a suggestion to you because yours is very unscientific. But I have an app here on my phone called Speedbox. I put it up on my dashboard, and I dial it in, and I can see it, my phone, and I can see the speed. And we just put different tires on my truck, and I was concerned that I'd be 1% or 2% off. I was right on the money. So you put Speedbox, just get the app, it's free, put it up there, tap it, it'll pull up a big speedometer. That's what I want you to use. But I want to tell you something. Let me change your question. Mark, when was the last time you had to deal with a speedometer that had changed because of wear, because of miles, because of whatever? And the answer is I don't ever remember doing that ever. They either quit or they work. And the only time we have a discrepancy is I say to you, did you just change the size of tires on your car? Yeah, my husband said he wanted a little bit bigger and taller ones. Okay, well, yes, the speedometer is going to be off. So that's my advice to you. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to find out I'm right. And if you find out I'm wrong, then call my mother. Okay?
Okay, Mr. Panty Puppy.
You know, sometimes I say things like that, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to probably get in trouble. But, you know, my name's Mark Trouble Salem, and so if I get a call from the general manager and he says, and it starts like this, did you really say? And there's no sense in lying, he's already heard the tape. So, yes, I am. What were you thinking? I wasn't thinking. Don't do that again. Yes, sir, I won't. So no one's ever told me I can't say my panties are wadded up. So anyway, that's 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, Strictly Diesel is I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road. He sells parts 24 hours a day on their website. Nate is a diesel monster. He knows Ford and Chrysler, Ford and Dodge and Chevrolets like very few people in this industry do. So if you've got a diesel problem and it doesn't start, you've got engine codes or something like that, and you can't find anybody that you feel like has confidence in their ability to find the problem, bid the problem, fix the problem, come in at the estimate or less, and then when you get in the car, you know it's fixed. So Strictly Diesel, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, a very good guy. Car repair's not easy. Here's the problem, and doctors don't like me to say this, but doctors have it easy because they can talk to their client. The car doesn't really talk to us, and we have to kind of figure it out. Now, some of the newer model cars, they give us a little bit more information, which kind of narrows down the problem. Not too long ago, we had a car coming in, and it had a situation where we had a bunch of heat codes. And so, inadvertently, somebody had disconnected the coolant sensor, and so the computer was really struggling what to do because it knew the ambient temperature was 110, but it didn't understand why the engine had no temperature at all. So plug in the coolant sensor and you're back in business. So yeah, we can talk to the car. We can talk to the car, but it can talk to us. But in reality, the very best person to talk to is the nut behind the wheel. And so either way, you can do it that way. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Hey, Gil, put your mic on. I've never had anybody from Los Angeles call the show, although I know that we do have a big footprint. But how'd you like how fast I came up with the answer?
That was pretty good. I thought you were going to be slowed down by the fact that he called from L.A.
Yeah, I wasn't going to begin to guess because, but that part's things working. All right, who's next, Gil?
That would be Sam.
Sam, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning. I've got a question about transmission fluid. I've got a 65 Chevy El Camino, which uses Dexron-type tranny fluid.
Yes.
Would it hurt you if you put Ford-type F transmission fluid in there? Are they compatible, or what's the deal with tranny fluids?
Okay, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't want to put, I mean, right now, your El Camino, I know everybody's going to say, well, that's an old El Camino. Today we know that everything's designed around an air temperature, a speed, a fluid, the engine temperature, the car, and the exhaust. So why is it, what are you trying to fix, or what are you trying to gain by going to Type F versus Dexron?
Well, I just saw something online about racing fluid with, I think it was Lucas Type F, and it was supposed to give you a harder shift. There's no friction modifiers in it, so it was supposed to be more grabby, I guess, on the bands or the clutches or whatever they are.
Okay. There is some adjustments we can typically do, not much, on your El Camino. It's probably, what year is it?
65.
Okay. Power glide, two-speed power glide, or a three-speed?
Yes.
Okay.
Two-speed power glide, yeah.
All right. You first of all, you run a risk of changing the fluid to something it wasn't designed to use and putting that thing in a range it's not designed to be at. And then you're also, if you late shift to power glide, you also make a risk of rattling something that wouldn't otherwise be rattled. So I don't agree with internet stuff, because if they were that good, they'd be working for me and make a lot of money. Everybody has the wives' tale, and I also don't like the idea of we get a Type F fluid, which is, by the way, a very, very, very old fluid. We put a Type F in something, and then we add an additive that throws the fluid out of spec. There's no such thing as putting chocolate in your milk and not changing the milk. So you can put oil in the water. You can put whiskey in your glass with water. It doesn't make any difference. It throws the whiskey out of spec. So it's a bad idea. I am of the opinion that it's a really bad idea to start pouring additives in your car, no matter what kind of commercials they have, because you're taking the fluid and you're throwing it out of spec. So everybody knows that Gil puts 50% vodka and 50% orange juice. And if he's happy there, that's fine, but it still throws both of them out of spec.
That's true.
All right, so if you were down a quart and you put one quart of Type F in it, and the rest of this Dexron, is still a no-no.
You're still going to throw the fluid out of spec, because you're putting two different kinds of trans. And I'm how many miles are on the El Camino?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. On that transmission, there's probably a 180,000.
Okay. Let's wait to decide what fluid we put in it when we rebuild it. You know, if you said to me, Mark, I'm going to change it to Type F, and would you go to Yuma in July with me? My answer is no. I'm not going with you. I just don't. That's so old school. You know, we used to just move fluids all the way. We used to put brake fluid in the transmission to think it would make it shift harder, and it doesn't. What it does is swell the rubber seals a little bit, and if you have a really minor leak, it might fix it. So, and brake fluid is a hydraulic fluid, and your power glide is a hydraulic transmission. So, I wouldn't do it if I were you. If there's so much on the internet that is so wrong, and it's so bad. Now, on a 1 to 10 scale, I think from number 2 or 3 all the way up to 12 is the information on the internet, and we fight with that a lot, because people want us to do what this guy said on the internet, and we don't know if this guy is in the United States. We don't know what his history is. He could be a carpenter, but he's pretending to be an automobile mechanic and an expert. And I want to tell you something, and I'm not bragging, but I am an oil expert. I would never do what you're suggesting to do. I wouldn't tell my brother to do it unless I don't like him. But at 180,000 miles, that thing has given you 3 times the service it typically gives you.
So I would hug it. I would continue to drive it. If you want to bark the tires, fine. But when you rebuild it, they can probably make some changes to give you a little bit more bark on the shifts.
Okay.
All right.
But is it is okay to put a little bit of brake fluid in the transmission? What are you talking, like 2 or 3 tablespoons?
Yep. Yep.
To swell up the seals.
That's it. That's it.
Okay.
Now, brake fluid's a hydraulic fluid. We don't compress it, so it's perfectly acceptable. And yes, people are going, Mark, it throws it out of spec. Yeah, but 2 or 3 tablespoons is quite different than a quart. So,
Okay. Yes,
you're right. Thank you, Sam.
All right.
Thank you very much. You know, when it comes to car repair shops, Automatic Transmission Exchange is a good repair shop, and he does transmissions since 1968. Keep in mind, we're talking about how long these guys have been on the, been working. So Phil is at 40th Street in Washington. He's been around a very long time. He does transmissions from the old to the new. You just have to meet Phil to understand that he was a personal friend of Fred Flintstone. He has been around for a very long time. The difference between those transmissions in the 60s and the 50s, 60s, and 70s to the one electronic ones today is the difference between brain surgery in the 50s and brain surgery today. Not to suggest that we're doing brain surgery. It's just the difference, the clear difference. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, if you want to argue with me, if you want to, me to settle a disagreement between you and your wife or you and your brother or you and your dad, I'm pretty good at that. But you can't hold me to the end of the deal because I'm only hearing half the story from you. And, of course, if your brother's there and you won't want to talk to me, that's okay, too. 602-508-0960. Well, my name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday we're here talking about cars. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician. I've got 40 years. I own my own shop. It's 20 bays big. I have a lot of technicians, and most of them are ASE Masters themselves. So together we know right from wrong. I'm not advertising my shop. I'm just giving you my resume. I've been around the block more than once. So I'm here to help you and not advertise my shop, to give you the best advice I can, and I've been doing that since 1988. Oh, you know what? Yeah, I was looking at the clock again, and Gil, just like I always do, I'm looking at the seconds. Well, we'll talk about somebody at Blackwell Automotive. Oh, Tom. Tom and I are twin brothers of different mothers. We think alike. Sometimes we're not necessarily enthralled with some of the decisions made by our staff. So if he's working on a gas leak and he drops the trouble light, the bulb explodes and catches the floor on fire, we don't really like that idea. But Tom's really, really good. 40th Street and Greenway's been around a long time. I've known him for 20 or 30 years. He knows what he's doing, and he works on older cars, and he likes hot rods. So if you got something in your garage and you want somebody to work on it and you live near 40th and Greenway, may I suggest Blackwell Auto.
And here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Let me tell you about Larry Harker's Auto real quick. 1967. Some of the other shops, 1968 and 1970. Harker's has been around a long time. 38th Avenue and Indian School, knows what he's doing. Ellen's at the front counter. Bob's in the shop. And there's many times I have referred people to him, and the person or Bob will call me back and say, bingo. So it's always nice for me able to do that. And there, folks, there's no money that exchanges hands in that transaction. It's just the blessing I get for God pouring a lot of stuff inside my ear. So if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Eden School, Larry Harker, we're going to do ladies first, guys. So April, you're going to be first. How can I help you? April?
Can
you? Go ahead.
Morning.
Good morning. How can
Hi.
I help you?
Hi. Okay, you were talking to Sam about not mixing fluids?
Yes.
Well, my husband says that it's good to put that gasoline additive in your tanks. Is that true?
If you have specific symptoms, your husband's right. If for instance,
no symptoms. He just thinks it's going to make everything work better.
Okay, well, I'm going to respectfully disagree with him. I'm going to respect. I'll tell you my side. Sometimes us guys think that if we use a really fancy oil, or if we put gasoline additive, or if we do this or do that, our car's going to love us, and it's going to last forever, and it's never going to let us down, and this is going to ensure my car will go around the world 10 times. And mm-hmm. nothing could be further from the truth. There is the only good thing about a fuel additive is if you have water in it, or if you want to diagnose it. We might use an octane enhancer to see if the timing is the problem for this engine pre-ignition or knocking. So there are times we do use gasoline additives, power steering additives, and that kind of stuff in a diagnostic process. But here's my vote, and please don't make him mad and hunt me down. I disagree with fuel additives if there's no symptom. I don't think it's necessary, and I don't think your car is going to love you anymore. So
well,
if I settle
you
your
very
argument,
much.
Fine. All right,
yes,
thank you.
I agree with you. You're the man.
Thank you. Thank you, April. You guys have to know I'm always siding with the woman because it's just the path of least resistance. And, of course, I'm teasing you. All right, let's go to Jerry. Jerry, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing this morning, Mark?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good. Listen, I've got a weird problem. I have a 03 Mercury Sable. Okay. And about a year ago, I had all the struts replaced. And ever since that time, I have a, when I come braking to a stop, I have an intermittent click, click, click kind of noise from the back end. Sounds like it's rotationally involved with the tires or the rear spindles. And I have had it to two or three different shops, and they can't, they've looked at brakes, looked at the suspension, looked at everything, and can't seem to find what that click, click, click noise is.
Hmm. And it only does it when you're slowing down. It only does it during braking. And you say that it is directly related to the speed of the car. So the faster the car's going, the clicks are faster.
Yeah, you don't hear it unless you're braking at about maybe, let's say, from about 15 or 20 miles an hour on down, probably because it's too noisy otherwise.
Okay.
But, you know, and then, like I say, it's like a click, click, click noise. It, you know, like I say, at first, when this first started happening, I thought there was something loose back there or maybe something getting caught up in the rotation of the tire maybe or something like that.
Okay.
You know,
well, let me give you some advice. I want you to climb on the brakes a little harder, a third harder, and I want to know if the click's still there. I'm wondering if we're just – if we're clicking the rear brake pads. I think we are because the symptoms, the clicking has nothing to do with the struts. Nothing.
Okay.
Then I also want you to do this. I want you to have your wife drive, or your girlfriend, or both of them, and I want you to sit in the back seat. And I want you to sit on the right side and then on the left side and teach them how to make a click, and you need to know which side you're talking about. Okay?
All right.
And you can do that from the back seat. But if you climb on the brakes and you say to me, if I roughhouse the brakes, the clicking's not there, then I am 90% sure the brake pads are the brake pads are clicking. And if you want to, you can go in and put new anti-rattle springs in it. But I want to tell you something. Because they're clicking, roll up your window, turn up the radio louder, because this is never going to cause you the need of a tow truck.
Yeah, well, it's been about a year, and it's, like I said, I've had it in a couple shops. And it just when I heard your station this morning, I thought, I'm going to call and see what kind of recommendations he has. So I appreciate that. Like I say, when I hit the brakes pretty hard, it's not there, but, you know, I'm an older driver, and I kind of, you know, come to a stop, you're kind of not on them hard, so that's when it does it.
Well, you can't drive like you've got – you can't – it's not a good idea to drive like you got a hot cup of coffee without a lid between your legs. I want you to get in the habit of just climbing on the brakes a little earlier. That's all, and a little harder, okay?
All right. Thank you for the information. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Same to you, sir. Kendall, you're up.
Good morning, Mark. Love your show.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have an 04 Tundra with 40,000 miles on it. And somehow or another, it likes to go through gas cap covers. First of all, how does a gas cap cover talk to the engine? And if it's been 2 years since I've replaced one, do you think I need a smoke test, or is another cap just the best way to go?
No, you're in the same groove as so many guys. The women never do this, but the guys do. It's not uncommon for us to have an evaporative leak that's causing a coat. I know that that's what prefaces your story. I'm not making fun of you.
Folks, for the rest of you, we suck the fuel, the fumes off the fuel tank and send them forward and we burn them. So if you, and that's called the evaporative system. That's why you don't stuff your fuel tank, because we can't handle liquid forward. So in the case of a car that has a code, an evaporative system code, we have to go figure out why the system can't suck forward. What's going on? And everybody always replaces the gas cap because that's what the three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store says it is. Frankly, the gas cap might fix 1 in 10. But if you just rub a little oil around the gasket and put it back on, reset the code, and everything is fine, then okay, the gasket's probably, then you get a gas cap. But in your particular case, piece of cake, have them do a smoke test. We're going to hook up a machine. We're going to cycle the system through to where it's going to suck fumes and not. Somebody's going to be underneath the car. Somebody's going to be in the car. And all of a sudden he goes, stop. He says, we got a disconnected line from the purge. We plug the line back in, or if it's a plastic line, it's broken. We just simply take a set of a windshield wiper hose and we slide it over the broken end, slide it over the other end. We're done. So yes, it's not normal for people to go through gas caps. And I don't remember the last time we replaced one that wasn't directly related to an evaporative leak. And I say one out of every 20 evaporative leaks are actually the gas cap. So
what if the code went away for over a year, though?
Well, it doesn't really make any difference. I mean, you can still buy gas caps, but what's the chance that you're going to buy a gas cap and you're going to end up with the code after it's cleared? And it has a lot to do with how many times you fill up and how many times we're going to activate and pull fumes forward. So, you know, you can try it. I like Stant products, radiator caps and gas caps. Everybody goes, go to the dealer. They have one. They have the same one I'm buying. There's no such thing as a Toyota factory that makes Toyota radiator caps. They buy it from a guy in Indonesia just like Chevrolet and Ford do. So,
well, that's why I wasn't sure how a gas cap actually works. It's just a simple rubber gasket then.
Does it have
a valve or anything in it?
Yes, it does. It's a rollover valve, so if you get upside down, we're not going to leak gas all over the place.
Okay.
But all we want it to do is be an airtight, and we have to have a little bit of air coming in. So we're either going to pull it through the gas cap or we're going to have a vent somewhere. Just depends on your make and model. So
the same principle as rubbing oil on the gas cap ring. Why not just rub oil where all the connections are, where the tubing runs into the metal tubing?
Because change your question, Mark, how many times do you have a problem with a connection? Rarely. What kind of problems do you have? Broken lines, disconnected lines, smashed lines, a canister filled with gasoline because the customer keeps overfilling the tank. Those are the issues. Well, there's a lot of guessing that can go on, and you're welcome to dance that dance how you want. I think it's in your best. If you want, I give you my best advice. Put another gas cap on it, because that'll probably make you feel good. But at the end of the day, if the code comes back, then I would have somebody do a smoke test, and that's what I'd do. But anyway, good luck, Kendall. Thank you very much. Tony, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a granddaughter. Excuse me. Her husband bought a new, brand new medium-sized pickup, the Chevrolet Canyon, I guess.
Okay.
That's what they call it. It's got the V6.
Okay.
Four-wheel drive. I drove it. I like it very nice. I like it very good. And what I like about it is that the the engine is a V6, and all cylinders function at the same time. You don't have any that are cutting off like some of these late model V8s, which I don't like at all. I won't buy one.
Okay.
So I'm in the market for that, but I haven't checked out the Ford Ranger V6 yet. And so I need your opinion, minus and plus, on this Chevrolet or the GMC.
The Chevrolet and the GMC are going to be sisters, but I think what you meant was the General Motors and the Ford.
I haven't tried the Ford out yet. Tried the Ford.
I agree with you, and so do a lot of other people. Folks, what he's talking about is oftentimes when we come to a stop, we turn the engine off or we kill some cylinders just to save fuel economy. It's one of those things. And then when you touch the gas pedal and release the brake, then the computer fires up all the cylinders. Everybody's afraid of that, but in reality, we now know that that's not a problem. And people are uncomfortable about that, and I understand that. It's okay. So there are, you can get on the internet and figure out ways to make it happen and make it not happen and all that kind of stuff. But in your particular case, I think the Ford V6, the General Motors V6, whether it's Chevrolet or GMC, and I think the Dodge V6 and the small trucks that you're talking about are worth looking at. I think you should drive all three. I think you should find out how much do I have to write my check for? How much? I want everything in. And what you don't want is, I saw the other day a dock fee of $499. A dock fee. That's for a young lady to type your name, address, and phone number into a contract. A dock fee. And they're going to transfer the docs to you. And so for $499, my God, for Mark Salem, I pay for the car, I pay for sales tax and license. And if you put the desert protection package on it, or if you put window tint on it, or if you put fancy white wall tires on it, or if you put fancy windshield treatment, I'm not paying for that. Take it off. Yeah. Take it off. Yeah. Can you tell my...
You got the, what they call in the olden days, that salesman... There's always a sucker somewhere like that.
Well, it's actually called the pack. We're packing the car with all these ancillary things that no one can prove. Yeah. You know what the Desert Protection Package is as far as Mark Salem's concerned? It's called Mop and Glow. Mop and Glow. You get the Mop and Glow stuff you buy for kitchen floors. You put it on a dust mop and you wipe it all over the car and it makes it look purdy. And it gives you nothing. So everything's clear coated. See, you get me all upset. I don't even like you anymore, Tony. But you get me all wound up for no reason. But
okay.
I think you're on the right track, and I applaud your. I think you're on the right track. Okay.
Okay, I'm going to try out the Ford. I stay with either one of them. One more real quick question. What type of oil? Do you have your own oil there for oil drains?
Do I have my own oil?
Do you keep your own oil there, or do you certain brands that you keep there on your place?
All the quarts of oil in the United States are made by Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, or Chevron. Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66. So if you buy a Mark Salem oil, it's either Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, or Chevron. I sell Chevron. I like Chevron. They treat me nice. They treat my customers nice. And I like selling what most people perceive as a really top-notch oil. So I pour Chevron for my customers. Got to run, Tony. And Harry, you stay right there because I'm going to get to you right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I have a story to tell you just real quick, and then I promise I'm going to the phone. I used to do a radio show in St. Louis on KMOX. It was a giant station with a huge footprint, Washington, D.C. to Denver, Colorado, from the northern Canadian border to Austin, Texas. It was huge. So a guy calls me up, and he says, you know, my check-in or my oil light is on, and I don't know how to turn it off. And I said, okay, are you in your car now? Yeah. I said, pull off the side of the road. And he goes, I'm driving a cab. And I said, so what? Pull off. You want me to fix it or not? He pulls off the side of the road. I said, okay, turn the key off, but the radio's going to go off. Turn the key off. Turn it back on, but don't start the car. Pump the throttle three times slow. 1, 2, 3. And he goes, okay. So he pulls off. I can hear the passenger talking to him like, what are you doing? He says, I'm just going to fix the light. Just hold on, the guy on the radio. So he goes, 1, 2, 3. He starts the car back up, and he goes, it's off. And I said, okay. That was such a big deal. You can't believe it. There was people all over saying, well, can I show you my car on my phone? That kind of stuff. It was a lot of fun, but that's a really easy one. But it's not on every car, but it was on his Chevrolet. Harry, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. Sounds like you're kind of wound up a little bit this morning.
You know, my wife was mad at me this morning, and one of the dogs was locked. Oh, you know, I'm not going to tell you, Harry.
Okay. Tell me the story.
Yeah. What's on your mind today?
Hey, since you're an oil guru, I I was kind of curious on your full synthetic and your semi, which one would have a tendency to, you know, if you don't drive, you know, long distance, short trips and whatever, would have a tendency to sludge up, or the full synthetic I would think would be less, and then the semi might be a little more.
Nope, neither one of them. They're both the same. If you get water in either one of them, it's not going to make any difference. You got to boil the water out. The only difference between, I'll do an oil test or a discussion after I get the callers. The difference between conventional blend or semi-synthetic and synthetic is the oil change interval. So conventional is 3 to 5,000. A blend is 5 to 7,500. And the synthetic is 7,500 to 15,000. And I go 12. I'm a little uncomfortable with the 15 number. So in your particular case, the semi-synthetic and the synthetic have nothing to do with moisture and short trips, because you're going to have the same amount of water in both of them.
Okay, on your semi-synthetic, they never tell you how much synthetic they have in it.
That's right.
I've asked a few places, and they don't know. In fact, I asked Ford, because I have a Ford now, and they didn't have any idea. And I'm saying, well, you know, you would think it'd be 50-50, but they don't even know. So
come on. They tell you your tires are filled with nitrogen and it's 10%.
Well,
all right. Yeah. I got to go, Harry. I got to go, but you bring a great question. Scott, you're up next.
Scott. Hello, Mark.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Mark, I got a real quick question about oil again.
Okay.
I've got a 2000 Chevy pickup, Silverado, that I replaced. I changed the oil about 2 years ago, and I don't drive that truck very often. And my question is, I got maybe 200, maybe 300 miles on that oil change, and it's a conventional oil. Would it behoove me to drain that and replace it, or how long can I last with that oil change?
I need you. The answer to the question is I'm not. I don't care if you leave it in there or if you don't. It's going to be okay.
Okay.
But I think what you should do at 200 miles in a year, I think we leave the oil in there and we let the dinosaurs take a break. I need you to go through a couple of heat cycles on that truck. Have you got a grandson?
I do drive it about once or twice a week. I do drive it around a few miles.
No. A heat cycle. Bring it all the way up to 220, 225.
Okay.
I need you to hot rod that truck. I need you to go to the town next to you, 25 miles. Go over there and have a, go over there and see your girlfriend, or go over there and see your old buddy or whatever.
Okay.
I need some heat cycles on that. And then after you warm it up fully and let it cool down, then come and get me and I'll let you drive me to New York City. We'll be fine.
Okay, good.
All right.
So can I ask one more real, real quick question?
Yes. Yes.
A couple weeks ago, or last week or the week before on your show, you were talking about windshield wiper blades. And you prefer AMCO, if I'm not mistaken?
ANCO is my personal preference. ANCO.
Oh, ANCO. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's all I needed to add.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You betcha. Thank you. Don, you're up next.
Thanks, Mark. I'm enjoying your show. First time listener.
Thank
I have
you.
A 90. 90- And then 93 Mercury, Grand Marquis. I love it to death, and I'm going to die with it, I suppose, because it's got 300,000 miles on it. Bought it at an auction for $800. And 4 years ago, I needed to recharge the air conditioner, so I had to replace the setup to the more modern. And it lasted me about a year and ran out of charge. So the next guy that charged it up said, you got a little leak going on. You might not get a whole season out of this charge I'm giving you. Well, he was right. I got the whole summer out of it, and then it started blowing hot air out of the vents. Fortunately, my daughter-in-law has a Nissan, and she loaned me her car for the summer. Well, for 2 years since that period of time, I've had to drive all summer long up here in Prescott, Arizona area,
mm-hmm.
and it's hot driving some of those months, and I can't get anything but the heat to come out of that air conditioner, out of the vents in the car. Well, I just figured I had a leak that had to be fixed, and it wasn't going to be affordable. So I just open my window and drive in the heat. two months ago, I accidentally hit the vent switch on the console on the dash, moving it from vent to something else. And when I did, the air conditioner came on. And it's been running perfect for the last 3 months.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
I'm blowing heat.
We got to get
heat again.
I only got a minute.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I can explain this to you, but I'm going to have to do it after the break. The problem you probably have is we are overcoming the cooling system with the heater core. So if you want to find out whether or not the heater, see, there's a heater valve in there, and so it'll give you cold air or hot air. Well, if it gives you cold air, but the heater gives you hot air, you get lukewarm. And so you say when you hit the vent, and that's called climate controls, you move the climate controls, and all of a sudden it blows ice cubes at you. Okay, in your case, on your Mercury that's 400 years old, you know what I'd do if I was your garage? I'd put a heater control valve on it. I'd just block off one of the lines. I'd put a ball valve on there and say, okay, when you turn it this way, it's summertime. When you turn it this way, it's wintertime. That's it. I would just take the heater away from it in the summertime, and then you open the valve, and the heater is after that. So, but I'll have another comment, but I've got to take a break because Gil's using bad words in my ear, and he doesn't think I'm going to be able to hit my time, which is 3 seconds from now. But I will. Welcome back, everybody. If you're unhappy with the radio show, if you're unhappy with whatever I said that happened to wad your pants up or whatever, here's what you do. You complain to this radio station, and you address your complaint to the Salem Network, and you're complaining about Mark Salem. I don't need to say anything else. Don, we're going to get to you real quick. Don,
Your wife isn't complaining, is she?
My wife's not even here, and if she was, she'd be mad at me, so I don't care. We got married 46 years ago. I was 5 years old, and I've never forgiven her since then. All right, let me tell you. We use vacuum, or we have a cable that opens and closes the gate. The gate circulates hot water through a radiator behind the glove box. Inside the same box is another radiator for the air conditioning unit. So we have one that gets cold and one that gets hot. And obviously, if they're both working, then you're not going to get cold air. You told me something that I suggest is that you hit the vent and that shut the heater off, which gave the only air coming out of the what we call the evaporator case, the only air coming out is cold. And that's good. So it's going to be a cable's messed up. It's going to be it's probably going to be a vacuum line. And actually, us gray-haired guys can fix it that fast. So the vacuum line on the pod, I can't tell you where it's at. The vacuum line on the pod's come off or something. But at the worst case scenario is you just put a valve on one of the heater hoses because it's a circulation thing. So it doesn't make any difference if you block the left one or the right one. It makes no difference. So a lot of times on the old guys, I don't want to spend a lot of money. And all I do is give them a little picture and say, this is cold, this is hot. Put a valve in one of the heater hoses, shut the hot water off, and he has air conditioning. So I got to run, but good luck, Don. And Bobby, you're next. How can I help you?
Mark, I was wondering, I have these people all the time that tell me when it gets hot out, the hot weather comes, that I should put a higher viscosity oil in. But if my car cooling system is working efficiently, the thermostat is okay, does my engine know how hot it is outside?
Yeah, well, it depends on the year, and typically the engine does know. But here's the deal. We want a thin layer of oil between two pieces of metal that are rubbing together, okay? And the clearance between these two pieces of metal that are rubbing together is the thickness of a hair, okay? Now, I'm going to ask you, do we want to use sewing machine oil to try to lubricate that very hot joint, or do we want to use peanut butter? Which one?
Yeah, the thin oil.
Yeah, So this is an old wives' tale from 100 years ago, and when we get hot, we need to go to a 40 weight, a 1040, a 2050. Nothing could be further from the truth. Plus, you'll lose fuel economy. The motor's not going to love you because it's working hard to push this peanut butter through these bearings that would really like to have water or sewing machine oil. So the answer to your question is it's a wives' tale. And really, the newer model cars have a 0-20. A 0-20, it flows like a 0 weight when it's cold, flows like a 20 weight when it's hot, but we got those in cars that are worth $100,000. And so they're not going to put a cheap oil in there, but it is a synthetic. 0-20 is a synthetic, but by far for fuel economy and longevity, that's one of the best oils out there that there is. So I agree with your wife.
So just to review, in a modern car where the cooling system is working efficiently, it doesn't matter what the outside temperature is on a hot day like today, for instance.
It depends. It depends. You want me to compare the engine knowing the outside air versus the climate controls? Or are you asking me, does the engine care? Does it care about the engine temperature? The computer. Does it care about the engine temperature or the ambient temperature? That's an easy one. The only time it cares about the ambient temperature is when you got your climate controls on. It wants to know how hot it is outside so it can tell you to do its best to cool off the inside. But if you took the engine, all it is cares about the engine. The ambient temperature has little, but the ambient temperature could cause the electric cooling fan to come on a little early. The engine temperature on a cold day, the thermostat's going to close down so it warms up the engine. So, yeah, there's an ambient temperature issue here, but if you're trying to tie a heavier weight oil to the ambient temperature, I'm not going down that trip.
That's exactly what I'm getting at.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with nothing. It has nothing to do with nothing. All righty?
These old-timers keep telling me that, oh, you got to put heavier oil.
And you know what I do, if I can make a suggestion? You guys won't believe it, but there's this guy that's an oil expert. And I asked him that question, and he told me about the water and the peanut butter analogy. And he said if your buddies really want the engine to love them and have the pillow effect, let's put peanut butter in there so we have this soft, cuddly pillow effect, then you guys should go get a couple of quarts of Jif. Put them in the microwave until they get to be liquid. Put them in your Mercedes-Benz or your brand-new Chevrolet or whatever. And then Mark said, your garage will love you because that won't last long and you'll be in there for a new motor. So it's just a peanut butter versus water scenario. That's all it is. And I think that just says it all. But anyway, I got to run. Thank you very much. And 602-508-0960. And if you're outside the Phoenix Valley area, how about this? 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. We had an L.A. caller. Can we get a caller from further away than L.A. to Phoenix? Perhaps in Newfoundland or in Bolivia. We'll be back. Okie dokie, 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me just describe where I'm at right now. First of all, unlike most radio talk show hosts, I'm fully dressed. Okay, got a pair of Levi's on, got a blue t-shirt on. I'm sitting here and my German Shepherd, my best friend, Jet, is laying here and snoring. The horses are out in the pasture running around, and when the horses are jumping and their back legs are going on, they make a funny noise. And it's a funny noise. Okay, let's learn about oil more. Except for you drivers, I want the rest of you to put your hands together as if you were praying. Okay? And then I want you to start rubbing push on your hands. Push really hard and rub your hands together. Faster, 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 faster. And you can feel the heat in your hands. Okay? That's your engine. So, do we want to put the oil, the consistency of water, into those tight hands to lubricate and cool the joint, or do we want to shove peanut butter in there? And that's exactly my argument to the old guys who have gray hair like me, who insist that we live by the rules of the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. And it's just not the case. Today, back in the old days, motors never lasted over 100,000 miles. I have, I wish I could remember, I have 40, I think it's 46 vehicles in the fleet that I'm responsible for, which is all my customers, that have north of 300,000 miles on them. You're not going to get 300,000, 400,000, 500,000, and I've got a couple of 500,000 plus miles. You're not going to get that unless you use the right oil and you take care of it. But if you're going to mess around, your engine's going to fail when you overheat it terribly or when you run it low on oil. Those are the two. But the fact of the matter is today, the technology and the oil and the gas and the engine's ability to stay at 220, which is where we want it, perfect 220. That's the best fuel economy. That's the best, that's the least amount of engine wear, on and on and on. There's a lot of old guys out there that want to take this magnet, put it on the outside of the oil filter because it catches all the metal particles. So let me get this straight. The oil filter is just a pleated cardboard filter, and you think that metal is going to come into the oil filter and it's going to get out. Man, it's not. It's just not. The micron is a very small piece of something that you can't even see. But the oil filter, if trash comes in, it doesn't leave the oil filter. That's all there is to it. So it really makes no difference. There's just so much. I need to use premium gas. I love it. My car loves me because I use premium gas. Let me explain premium gas versus regular. You'll understand this. The women will understand it. The guys are going to argue with me. I have a balloon in my hand, and the balloon represents the explosion with regular. Okay? So you put a pin in it, pop. That's it. That's it. That's the power of unleaded or regular. Now, and this is exaggerated, premium. Premium is, it's like me taking the balloon and it's full of air and letting it go and it goes, right? It's the time. Regular gas, one molecule ignites 10,000 and 10,000 ignite 1 million. So the burn is very fast. The explosion is very fast. So it's kind of like somebody punching in the arm, like that, okay? Premium gas is one molecule ignites two, and two ignite four, and four ignite six. So the burn is longer. So it's like me pushing you, or I put my hands on you, and I push you, you know, for 10 feet. I'm exaggerating it, but it's the time the explosion occurs. So regular, the explosion is very fast, and premium, the explosion is slower. Now, is your car going to love you because you give it premium? No, it's not. It's not going to give you 1 mile or 1 day or 1 month's longer service, especially a car from probably early 90s to now. That's 20 years. So it's not really an issue that you're going to make your car love you by giving it special stuff or fuel additives, oil additives. And here's what you can do. You can drive your car on a 1 to 10 scale, a 5 or a 6. So a 1 scale is Grandma Moses, who goes to church every Sunday and to the liquor store every Wednesday, and both of them are within three blocks of her house. That's not good because we don't ever take the engine through a heat cycle. And the more heat cycles, the better the engine loves you. So it likes to go up to 220, and then it comes down to ambient temperature. It's kind of like a horse. If you're going to leave the horse in the pasture, and you're going to soft pedal the engine, and all you do is just drive as if you got a hot cup of coffee between your legs, it ain't never going to be good. But if you take the horse and you walk it, and then you trot, and then you run, and you do that every day, the horse is going to be very strong. The horse is going to like that. The horse isn't going to be an old nag that's crippled and walks with three legs. So it's that way. It's that way with your car. Today's cars are so sophisticated. I mean, we're measuring everything. And I'll tell you what controls everything. It's what's coming out of the tailpipe. Everything is predicated on what's coming out of the tailpipe. That's it.
all this fancy stuff we've got, all these computer controls and sensors by the dozens, has everything to do with the tailpipe. Now, in the 50s, and 60s, and the 70s, and to some extent the 80s, if you wrapped your lips around the tailpipe of one of those cars that was running, you'd be dead in 30 seconds. I'm exaggerating. Today, if you wrap your lips around a car that's idling, that's been made in the last 10 years, you're going to die of starvation before you die of asphyxiation. Again, I'm exaggerating it to make my point. So that's what it's all about. It's all about oil, and it's all about heat cycles, and it's all about what's coming out of the tailpipe. Really and truly, people would accidentally die in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s and in the early 80s because of leaving it running in the garage and stuff like that. It's been a long time since I've ever heard, and I'll bet not any of you can tell me that somebody died of asphyxiation except for somebody that wanted to. Another thing that, not to belittle or belabor the point, but if you think you're going to die by locking yourself in your garage with your 2012 General Motors car, you're going to be there a long time. You might want to get a hamburger and go into your garage because you're going to be there a while. And that's what it's really all about, is what's coming out of the tailpipe. The entire car is designed to clean up what's coming out of the tailpipe. That's all there is to it. And, of course, they want it to ride smooth, and they want it to start easy, and they want to accelerate, and they want cold air conditioning. We have all kinds of different climate controls. Now we're blowing cold air and warm air at your tail end, and we've got mother can be next door with the temperature at 110, and husband's driving the car, and he's at 32. We've got all that kind of stuff. We've got sophisticated cars, and I would say that most of the owners of those cars don't use half of the creature comforts that they could use. So, and that's okay. I mean, but very few people read their owner's manual. And it's a good idea to just kind of digest it the best you can. It's always better. And many of you know that the newer model cars start at about 50 and go north of that. But here's why. Number one, they're technologically advanced. Number two, they're going to last a long time. Number three, they're going to get good fuel economy. And the maintenance schedules on the newer model cars may very well be one-fifth of the old cars. The old cars, we changed oil every 3,000 miles. We changed a lot of fluids at 15 and 20 and 25,000 miles. Today, on the newer model cars, you don't really do anything maintenance until 75 to 100,000 miles. Really, nothing. Look in your owner's manual. You know, and we're doing oil changes at 7,500 to 15,000 miles. Now, for me, I don't like that 15 number. For me, I use a synthetic oil. My diesel holds lots of quarts of oil, but I'm pretty much in the 10 to 12,000 mile range. I'm a little not comfortable to go to the 15. But that's okay. If you're comfortable, go ahead. My son laughs at me because he goes past 15, and he says, I can still outrun you when we're out at the ranch and no one's around and we're on the dirt roads that we own. How do you like that? The way that I ducked out of that. But, yeah, he can outrun my truck, and it has nothing to do with the fact that he goes 15,000 miles on his oil change and I do 10 to 12. It has to do with, he has a special turbo, but I've not been able to find, we have a repair shop, find the receipt so I can determine where he got it and so I can buy one for my truck. And that's the truth. So somewhere along the line, and he has a performance division for gas and diesel cars, diesel trucks, and he does that on a regular basis. He enhances the drivability of them to make them have a little bit more power, and a lot of times it has to do with off-road vehicles like the Can-Am and the Polaris and tires and wheels and windows and lights and all that kind of stuff. He has what I call happy money.
people that spend money on the performance side and on the hot rod side-by-side and four-seater side, they're happy to spend the money. And most people that bring their cars into us for maintenance or a problem are not happy to spend the money. So there's happy money and sad money. Nevertheless, let me give you advice to make your car run the longest as possible. If you see it's overheating, pull off to the side of the road. It's cheaper for a tow truck. And it's not a good idea to soft foot your car. Don't drive like there's an egg between your foot and the throttle. I want you to just roughhouse it every once in a while. That's all. Just roughhouse it. The other night, my wife and I were going to dinner. We pulled up to a very dark intersection. I was driving her Ford Edge. I had a Yogi Bear mask on because I can't afford to be seen in a Ford, but that day nobody knew because I had this Yogi. So anyway, I took off rather rapidly. And I know that my wife does drive a little aggressive, but not as much as I took off. And so she used bad words, and I slowed down. But the idea was I don't think she had rattled the motor at all, and there's carbon that builds up. And so what you do is you just take the engine up to a high RPM in first or second gear. It kind of rattles the motor, and if you could be outside, you'd see that the exhaust would turn gray and perhaps some black. But it doesn't stay that way. It just, when you're hard on the throttle, that's what happens. I'm not suggesting you hire your 16-year-old grandson to go hot rod your brand-new Ford. That's not what I'm suggesting. I'm just suggesting that driving it nice and soft and just as if, you know, you didn't care where you were going is not going to give you the life on the motor as, and I'm going to draw the line between a 16-year-old and a 70-year-old man. Somewhere in the middle is the sweet spot. And for me, I'm on a 1 to 10 scale. My truck's get a 6 and sometimes a 7 if I'm pulling a horse trailer or something. So, but every once in a while they go to 100. They go to 10. I work them hard. I might be going up a hill hauling hay and I decide I'm just going to throttle it up and go to the top of the hill and then on the other side I'm going to back down and I'm on my load as I go up the hill, it's loaded. So the engine's really touching one another and everything's rubbing one another and the oil's doing its job. As soon as I get to the top of the hill on the other side, back off the throttle and just coast. So the engine cools down. So I went through a heat cycle. That's kind of what's important. You can buy any oil you want. Ask your garage what he puts in his wife's car. Well, first, do you love your wife and are you divorced? I hate my wife and we're divorced. Okay, what do you put in your mother's car? But really and truly, what you put in there is what the manual says or what says on the oil fill cap. So if it says 020, you put a 020. If it says a 530, you put a 530. You are best served by following the manufacturer's recommendations because they built the car. My email address is mark with a K at marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. If you have a question, I'm happy to answer it. If you live in Arizona, give me your phone number and so I can call you, and I call from a blocked line. I hate to type, so that's the reason why sometimes I call. We'll see you next Saturday right here.